Welcome to episode 6 of Enter the Jasmine Dragon. In this episode, I talk with my friend Sabrina, and we talk about the makeup industry, our friendship origin story, and our experiences with mental health, both our within our communities and our personal journeys. All right, so this is my friend Sabrina, and we've been hanging out for a while already, but we had some Chick-fil-A. Thank you very much, Sabrina, for treating me.
Anytime.
And we're having some peppermint tea with some honey. How often do you drink tea, Sabrina?
I think I drink tea now like twice a week.
Okay. What do you normally have?
There's this like Kenyan Lipton tea. I want to say that's like the brand that it is. I don't know if it's like smuggled in from Canada or something, but my mom gets like tons of packs of it. So she brought it to me like sometime in April. I want to say like 2-3 boxes, and I've just been having tea like twice a week. Increase it if I'm like not feeling well, and throw in like some type of like cough drop into it. Don't know if that actually works, but mentally it like works in my head. So yeah. But I grew up, like, drinking tea. Like, that's, like, the norm in my family. Yeah. Every day at, like, 4 o'clock.
Yeah, because I've been to, like, some Somali places, and they have, like Somali tea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
sure. Like, what makes it, like, Somali tea?
So, similar to the tea that we're having now, like, we kind of, like, brew it the same way. And then we add milk into it. So, you'll have either, like, regular, like, whole milk or, like, camel milk as well. And they call it, like, sha. And we drink it. Honestly, the closest I've ever tasted a shy is, like, chai tea latte at Starbucks. And Oprah used to have, like, a specific one.
Wait, really?
Yeah. And the tea was actually, if you, like, looked into it, it's from Kenya.
Wow.
I, like, used to be so addicted.
That explains why there was this, like, one Starbucks.
Yes. Had,
like, there's so many Somali folks there. So, like, specifically Somali men.
Yep. Somali men. That was, my dad was one of them. I'm not kidding. My dad used to hang out there all the time.
It was the corner of Franklin and Nicollet.
Yep.
Why do you know? Is that the one? Like, why is it?
I think it's because near Cedar Riverside or somewhere like, there. So they, like walk the, over the or, there, like, yeah. They either, like, walked over or, like, it was, like, a pit stop between Cedar Riverside and then, like, the mosque or, like, work. But I'm not kidding. My dad legit used to hang there every day, tea time, with his friends. It was, like, the place to go.
It was, because I used to live pretty close to the area. And I would, like, go there and like, but it was, like, I was, like, the, I'd, like, go there, like, try to do some writing. But it was, like, way too crazy because there were too many people there. And it was, like, kind of really wholesome, too, because, like, the baristas were, like, these, like, white college-aged, mostly women, and they, like, knew the Somali men by name, and they're like, oh, hey, like, whatever, Abdi, like, do you want to get the regular whatever, and
they literally became, like, family. Like, my dad knew every single barista that worked there.
Yeah, I, like, did not expect to see that like, cross-cultural thing.
Mm-hmm. It's, like, a very weird, random space for it to happen, but, no, Sha is, like, a definitely, like, a must within the culture. My mom gets I don't know if it's true or not, but she'll be like, I have a headache because I didn't drink my shot today. And I'm like, all right, I'll go make you some. I'm like, you didn't drink your tea, did you?
I hear what you're saying. I'm on it. Yeah, it was really weird because, like, I think it's closed now, but there used to be, like, a Somali-owned cafe that was, like, less than a block away from that Starbucks called Moonlight Cafe.
Oh, yeah, no, I've never.
And it was, like, not popping compared to that Starbucks.
Yeah, they probably didn't make as strong of the chai tea latte because I swear it's like they used everything similar to how we made it in Kenya, like back home.
Wow, that is super interesting.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to talk to you about was like I wanted to share our friendship origin story. I want to hear your take on this.
Well, I feel like I don't remember, like, again, like, the nitty-gritty of how we met.
Neither do I.
But I remember, like, we were, I want to say it was your sophomore year or your junior year?
I think it was my...
Or going into.
Maybe, I think it was going into my junior year,
yeah. Yeah, and it was going into my sophomore year. Yeah. And those are the days that I thought I was going to be a civil engineer slash, like, pre-med slash try to take over the world in that medical realm.
Yeah, I remember you being pre-med.
Yeah.
Bring it up.
And I needed to take a chemistry course, but I had to take a couple of like other prereqs, so I didn't get a chance to do it. And someone was like, go take it at St. Paul College. Yeah. So then I took it, and I cannot remember if you sat next to me. Somehow we got close together. Like, yeah, we were just like, we hit it off really well.
Yeah.
I don't remember us even studying, to be honest with you. Like, I feel like we hung out for the intention of studying, but I legit don't remember studying with you. But I remember us hanging out.
Yeah.
So I'm like, did we even test each other? Like, I don't think so.
No. Okay, so here's my recollection. Mm-hmm. I remember, I was going into, like, my junior year. I was transferring schools. I needed a chemistry thing. So I was like, all right, like, community college, let's bang out some of the generals real quick. Mm-hmm. I do remember us getting together to study. And now that we were talking about this, I remember, like, having anxiety because we weren't studying.
Literally, right? I was like, I swear I don't think we're talking.
I remember, like, all right, Sabrina, let's start studying. That's what I, like, that's the feeling coming up from me now we're talking about this.
Sounds right.
I felt like I was trying to keep us on track, mm-hmm, and you were like, not on track.
Not. That's very on brand for me, so I agree.
And I remember, like, having lots of fun with you, but also somewhat, like, thinking, this is not somebody I normally hang out with. But the vibes felt really good.
Yeah.
And it was, like, it felt like we always respected each other, and we always had a lot of, like, mm-hmm, care and love for each other.
Yeah.
And I don't remember, like, I think we had, like, one lab project or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember.
Was that African teacher? He's African, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Was he like East or West African or something?
I don't remember, but I remember one time we had like fucked up some lab instruction, and like we kept adding, I don't even remember what the chemistry thing was, but we kept adding something that was supposed to like change color in the presence of something else, and then we fucked up reading the instruction, so we kept adding it when we should have been like dipping it in something else or something, mm-hmm, and I remember him coming by and in his like very strong accent saying like, "Why are you guys wasting my isotope or whatever?"
I wouldn't be surprised.
And he was just like such like cranky. The amount of cranky dad energy, yeah, was just like through the roof. Like he was
over us.
Yeah, like it wasn't even his money. It was like his mm-hmm, like it was like his funding, and he was like complaining about it like a dad would complain about the thermostat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was like a really wholesome class.
I know, because I remember our first
day. Like, he made it also.
He did. Wasn't he the... I'm pretty sure this was the professor who's like, I say, when I call a woman sweetheart or honey, it's like endearment, not like, I'm not sexualizing you or like belittling you. This is what I say to my wife. It's like, it's an African culture. And I'm like, I'm still belittling motherfucker. Yeah. That's because you say it's African.
Yeah.
But I feel like that was him his first day. Like, he had that energy, so I would agree.
Yeah, he had that like old school energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I remember he had, like, kids that were at St. Paul College,
yeah,
too. Yeah. I remember that seemed really cute to me.
Mm-hmm. Free tuition. Turn up.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I remember us three. I don't remember if there were any other, like, BIPOC people.
Probably, but I think we were, like, Hoda, you and I just, like, hit it off really well, which I do not remember if we were on like the same team project something.
Yeah, I think I remember you and Hoda like hitting off especially well, and I was I remember being somewhat intimidated by Hoda.
Oh yeah, no, I could 100% see that. She's so badass.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah. She was like super like, I'm just here to get the grade. I could give no fucks about literally any one of you.
Yeah.
No, I don't remember if like I was included in the fucks given or not. To be perfectly honest, and I'm still not sure where I lie.
Probably not.
she was like here to get a degree, and like if you weren't helping her, you were like in her way.
Yeah.
And I admire very much like the like this is a stepping stone for me to get to like where I'm trying to get.
Yeah, because shout out to her, I didn't even tell you, she's at Columbia.
What?
Yeah, I think she's doing her PhD now.
Wow.
In like epidemiology or something like that. I can't remember. But she's like, yeah, she's killing it.
Okay. Yeah. Because I like through the social media algorithms, I like stopped being able to follow her. Maybe she like stopped friending me or whatever. But
yeah.
At the time, I remember like, oh, she's like on her grind. She wants to like.
No, she had big plans for sure. Yeah.
I wasn't aware that she had like research and like PhD ambitions too.
Yeah, that was actually a new surprise to me. But I mean, like, that makes sense. I guess that's a way of conquering the world, so that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember what happened, but we like kept talking, and I don't remember what, like, why we kept talking.
You and I?
Yeah.
Yeah, we stayed in touch because I remember I came to your like parties at St. Paul campus.
Yeah.
And I kept telling you, like, today I was earlier, I was like, tell me about your friends, because I remember going to house parties with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And inviting you to, like, my campus stuff.
Yeah, I remember going to your campus stuff, too. Yeah. And I remember thinking, like, wow, the U is, like, a totally different, like, universe.
Yeah. Not the same, that's for sure.
Yeah. So for context, like, I always was at small liberal arts colleges that were, mm-hmm. like, 2, 3, maybe pushing 4,000 people. And then Sabrina was at University of Minnesota, which is, like, enormous, like, what, 100?
I think it's like 50,000 total students at that time. And my graduating class was around 5,000 to 6,000. I can't remember, like, 5,000 something something.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and there's also, like, various grad schools.
Yeah, there you have, like, several different colleges. Because I was in the School of Liberal Arts.
Yeah.
And the School of Design.
Really?
Yeah, because retail merchandising was there. It's the most random, college for it to be in, but it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And over the years, we just kept in touch and kept hanging out and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now it's been...
Yeah, even though you didn't come visit me in New York, but...
Oh, whoops.
But every time I'd come home, at least we, like... Most of the time, I'd come home.
Okay, moving the goalpost here.
That's how that... Whoa, not every time. That'd be lying on record.
There were times where you reached out and, like, had intentions to hang out.
Exactly. It just, you know, face plant. I tried.
We both tried.
Exactly,
We initiated conversations sincerely with the intent to hang out.
Exactly.
And we have been supportive of each other in many ways.
But regardless, we, like, literally text every week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a week, like... Especially if I sometimes forget.
No, we text often.
We text a lot.
And I think one of the... Now that I'm thinking about our friendship, like, something that, like, truly means a lot to me is that, like, I feel that you're always supportive of, like, where I'm at and what I'm trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
Whatever that looks like in my life. And not that I was, like, trying to reflect it, but I always try to be, like, supportive of what my friends are accomplishing too.
Yeah.
Including yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we were talking, like, on the, while we were eating, like, sometimes, like, our families don't do a great job of, like, showing us that support, right? So,
yeah.
I think we've also, like, been drawn to each other in that way, because it's, like, sometimes we don't have that familial support, and it's, like, even small things, like, I don't know, if we want to do, like, an MBA program, or if we want to start a podcast like this, or if we want to start a business, or change careers, or change jobs, like, our family doesn't always, like, get that.
Yeah.
But I think we're always trying to, like, if we don't, like, outright support it, we're trying to, like, see why you're trying to do that, and, like, if you do something flat out, like, dumb.
Yeah.
Like, I'll try to, like, hey, like, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you trying to solve here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there a better way to solve this? But it's not outright, like, no, that's stupid. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, because I feel like we talked through some of your, like, big career shifts. And just, like, I feel like I've told you this, but, like, you talking about your job now versus you talking about, like, accounting realm is so, like, complete 180. It's the funniest thing ever. I mean, it's horrible that you had to go through it, but, like, legit, like, so different. And then, like, I feel like I've talked to you about all the different, like, every time I feel like we're talking about work on my end, I'm always like, F this place, I'm trying to leave this, or, like, do this, or do something different. And it's always like, yeah, I feel like sometimes we have an understanding that, like, we have this, like, cultural, like, background where they're not the same, but they're similar in that aspect of, like, follow the steps and, like, this norm and follow the line. And then you and I are definitely criminal when it comes to not doing that.
We are, like, the black sheep of our family.
Like, literally.
Like, it took me, like, it actually took me years to realize that I was the black sheep of my family. Like, I just didn't, I just, like, wasn't aware. Because, like, for many years, I was, like, the good kid. Mm-hmm. Or one of the good kids. We had multiple good kids in the family. Mm-hmm. And then, after a while, I was like, wait a minute. I'm no longer doing, like, the lucrative thing that my degree is in.
Yep.
I, like, am, like, artsy. I'm, like, doing lots of writing right now. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in entrepreneurship. Like, my parents don't talk about what I'm doing for work with the rest of my family. I'm the black sheep of my family. Yeah. And it just hit me like a Mack truck. And I was, like, floored.
Mm-hmm.
Floored.
No, I mean, my grandma thinks I do makeup. People's makeups at malls, so... It's understandable.
It's so disrespectful.
It's like the easiest transition of like, oh, like, how's the mall going? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I do not work at a mall. But like, they think makeup selling, and it's like, oh, you put makeup on people's faces. I'm like, I guess so. I guess that's what we'll say for now. It's just easier. That makes sense. Just don't ask me to do your makeup, because you will not look as good as a professional makeup artist.
That's all I can tell. Okay, so this leads me really well to something else I wanted to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you work in the makeup industry, not in the mall putting makeup on people. You're not, mm-hmm. like, makeup in... You don't work in the makeup industry in that way.
Yep.
Like, what... Tell me in your own words, like, what do you do exactly?
Yeah, so, well, from a title perspective, my title is Senior Manager of International Marketing. From a roles perspective, I wear several different hats, because I think there's this misconception, one, within the makeup industry, that when you work within makeup, they think... Oh, you do makeup, like, you put people, you are a makeup artist, like, you put foundation and concealer and, like, skincare items, and I'm like, that's one realm of makeup, that's not what I do. And then there's this also, this other part of misconception of my role, where people hear marketing, and they're just like, oh, you bring a product to life, and I'm like, I don't do, like, the development part, which is, like, that's 100% needed, and there's, like, people that have that business, like, understanding, they work with product developers, also known as, like, PD departments. I don't work in, like, product marketing. I do international marketing, which is similar to more, like, business development. So I work with, like, we call them, like, commercial or sales teams.
Okay.
So they're really the ones that, like, work with the retail partners to sell in products.
Okay.
I partner with my international team members, and I look at, like, certain assortment gaps and how to facilitate that through, like, product marketing team. I work with understanding how to close the gap with certain, like, supply chain processes. I work to look at how do we optimize and share back what are key winning aspects or programs that we could be participating in international markets, such as Mother's Day in the UK is, like, in March. And people here, when you think about, like, Mother's Day, you think, like, May.
Yeah.
And then you think of a mother as, like, a mom and daughter, but it's, like, that mom structure also changes within different cultures, where it's like my grandmother teaches me how to cook, or like maybe it's like a third, like my aunt, like there's different ways of, like, looking at the consumer in different international markets. And really my job is to, like, champion my sales team's, like, needs and my regional needs back to our international team in different departments. So I'm kind of, like, aware of different hats within my department.
Yeah.
And that's how this realm of marketing that I work under does. Like, that's what I do.
So you have to keep, like, tabs on a huge variety of,
multiple things, multiple cultures, multiple different holidays. My biggest project that I just finished was actually 11/11 for China, for our China team. And when I first started, didn't really have, like, a specific product for it.
Yeah.
And didn't really talk much about, like, just the consumer.
Tell me what 11/11, what your, like, understanding of 11/11 is.
So 11/11 is, like, Singles Day, so November 11th. And then from my regional perspective, like, it's, like, a key shopping period for us.
Yeah.
And that started off within that region. And now, obviously, like, it's kind of expanded in the world. And I don't know about you, but I got so many emails from, like, Sephora, Ulta, all these, like, random, like, brands specifically that I followed. Like, here's 11% or 22% for Singles Day. Like, they just have a bunch of, like, deals. But, like, gone are the days where it was just Alibaba and, like, Tmall or somewhere in China doing, like, a Singles Day promotion.
Right.
Now it's, like, everyone, which is great. Like, thanks for reminding me that I'm single, one, but also shout out to giving me a great discount, because I really wanted another moisturizer. But it's, like, making sure that our global or North America team is aware that this is a huge shopping moment. Yeah. Like, we need to make sure we have a product available. We need to make sure that we have a good, like, storytelling, like, ready to go. We have, yeah, like, medias to support, assets to support, things that are just, like, how do we bring a product to life to actually sell through stuff that the sales team is selling in?
Hmm. Like, being Chinese, I'm, like, I'm aware of Singles Day in, yeah, China. I just, like, didn't expect it to be, like, to, like, start having such a global, being a global thing.
Yeah.
I wasn't expect, like, I was not expecting you to say, like, Sephora was emailing you about 11-11.
Yeah, and now, like, these are the same retailers in, like, here in North America and other brands that, like, are now having Lunar New Year items. They have it based on, like, the year. Like, the year of the pig, there were, like, these little, yeah, cute little leaping, like, pigs on, like, product, like, in packaging.
What?
Yeah, I'm not even kidding.
I did not expect China to have this influence. Like,
yeah,
I was more aware that, like, you know, like, Japan and, like, South Korea might have some of this, like, enter the Western mainstream a little bit.
Yeah.
I just, like, wasn't expecting China to have something, yeah, similar.
No, and I think every market, every international market has, like, its own thing that it's bringing to us. Like,
yeah,
with Japanese or, like, K-beauty, there's, like, certain styles of, like, double cleansing and, like within product assortment, like, that's how they're influencing us. I think with China, it's, like, that too, from a product placement, product position, but also from, like, a holiday key shopping aspect too.
Yeah.
And I just learned, like, maybe 3 years ago, 2-3 years ago, that Valentine's Day is, like, in August in China, and I, like, did not know.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, so I was like, holy shit, what? So we were doing, like, our Valentine's Day shoot, like, in early summer here, but we were prepping it for late summer in, like, the calendar year, because that's, right, when they were, like, that's when we were targeting that.
Right.
And I was like, oh, interesting. Did not know that.
Hmm.
And I think that's, like, the cool part, too, because, like, people, like, wonder, like, what region I work on, and my background is extensive, like, the last 4 or 5 years now has been, like, China and APAC region, so Southeast Asia, mm, Australia, and they, like, look at me and they're like, what the fuck? It's like this black girl traveling through Asia. And I'm like, I represent the Asian market. And they're just,
is,
like,
is this what diversity looks like?
Literally, they're like, what is happening here? And, yeah, I'm like, we need, like, more shades for, like, our Chinese or, like, our Indonesian or our Malaysian or Singaporean. There's different types of Asian community and different shades within, yeah, that community. And here I am, like, fighting for that type of, like, mm, inclusion.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's, like, obviously there's, like, other marketers here fighting for, like, inclusion for people that look like me.
Right, right.
But I think it's always interesting because I'll be emailing people for a while and they've never seen my face, like, maybe for, like, 6 to 8, 10 months.
Yeah.
And then I finally go to the region and I, like, meet up for a meeting and they're just, like, standing. They're like, oh, when is Sabrina coming? I'm like, oh, hi, I'm Sabrina, actually. And they're like, what the fuck? And I'm like, I mean, nice,
your last
to
name
you
kind of gives away.
I know, right? I'm like, I mean, Ali, like, what did you, like, I don't understand.
You're a white girl? Like,
but people have literally, like, so I guess with the signature too, or the way emails come out, they think, yeah, Ali's, like, my first name. Like, Allie, they call me Allie sometimes, and I'm like, you'll just meet me and figure it out, like, it's fine. She's like, why would Sabrina be on last name? Like, I don't,
you know, Allie's,
like,
Sabrina.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, it's fine.
Yeah, you know, like, a lot of white men have, like, two first,
yeah,
names. Like, so I'm like, is, whatever. This is like Allie Sabrina.
Yeah, I'm just like, I look forward to the day you meet me.
So in your role now, like, you're, how many, like, markets are you focused on?
The one that I'm currently doing right now is everything outside of everything outside of the USA and Canada, I help with.
That's so, like, that's the rest of the world.
Literally. So this one's a little bit more unique only because they didn't really have international marketing just yet. So I was really, like, their first entry into that. So I'm, like, a team of one right now. So in the morning, I work with, like, maybe our UK, EU, Middle East, like, facilitators, and I'll work on projects for them. The middle of the day, I'll work with our Latin America team members or, like, whatever they're functioning for that area of the business. And then at night, I focus on, like, China, APAC. It just kind of, like, changes every day, every single hour. It's, like, different. I just kind of have to, like, take off one hat, put one on, take it off, put,
like,
another one on.
I'm, like, short-circuiting here. I, like, yeah, tuned out halfway through because I'm, like, this.
Yeah.
All right, we're about to get into some ways that you might get you into trouble.
Yeah.
So you don't have to comment on this. I will say it. This doesn't sound like a very, like, well-organized approach. You don't have to. Actually, don't. I'm asking you. Don't respond to that.
No comment. Actually,
I guess in. Okay. Let's backtrack a little bit to get you out of trouble. So like the Asian markets, and then like advocating for their needs.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things that I'm aware of as an East Asian person is that, like, as an Asian American, I'm aware that colorism is a thing. Like, not just in America, like, people forget, sometimes forget that colorism exists, like globally.
Yeah.
Including, like, the Asian countries, East Asian, Southeast Asian. And, like, one of the places where, like, skin bleaching products or skin whitening products is, like, you know, China and East Asian countries and Southeast Asia. Like, is that something that you, like, see? Or is that something that you, like, I don't know, like, try to address somehow?
Oh my God, yes. The way, I guess, things that I've seen is, like, some of these, like, big beauty brands, none that I've worked for, thank God, but some of these, like, bigger beauty brands that have, like, exclusive lines just for, like, maybe China, or they'll have it in, like, Singapore, and it's, like, literally skin lightening products, like a skin lightening collection, for example. And it's just so absurd to me, because I'm like, it doesn't matter where in the world you are. Yeah. Again, like, even growing up in Africa, it's like, within the African spectrum, there's like fairer skin to deeper skin, and it's always like the deeper skin trying to get to the fairer skin. And then it's like, you can tell with like the hand color, etc. But I think,
like,
work
quick side note, like, nobody in our countries are like getting tans intentionally.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, you're like, you are not gonna find a $5 tanning store.
No.
Anywhere in our countries.
No. No, literally not one.
It's called being a day laborer.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
It's like, it's associated with like doing manual labor, being outside all day.
Yeah.
Not being able to be inside and away from the sun.
And whereas like within the continent, it's kind of like, of Africa, it's like there's just a range. There's like an inside joke within the Somali community where it's like, you could legit have the same mom and father, and you are a whole rainbow of different colors. Same mom and dad.
Yeah.
And it's just like, one could be like bright as day, and the other one is like dark as night. Like, it doesn't matter. And that's where I think it's interesting from like an addressing perspective. It's like, I'm very much an opponent of, if we're looking at, you want more refreshed, brighter skin versus lighter skin. Yeah. We can look at vitamin C infused items. We can look at how to sell that from like that aspect versus telling the consumer, like, yes, let's not address the fact that you're trying to look lighter. Like, that to me is like very problematic. And I'm always like the first one advocating against that.
Yeah.
And I think I also make them uncomfortable too when they look at me and like, you see a black woman, and then here you are about to tell a black woman, can they put more skin lightening items? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, so that helps too. Working in Asian countries,
think about
like
what
me.
You're saying and who you're saying it to.
Read the room.
Yeah. Yeah. Think about it.
That helps. But I'm glad that like, that's never come up. It has come up, within aspects of like, how can we talk about like, our brightening, like vitamin C, gives like a lighter skin. I'm like, let's back it up.
Yeah.
It's not about like, we're changing your skin color.
Right.
We're having you go from like dull to like refreshed.
Right.
It is not about like, it's maybe reducing pigmentation, not getting rid of your pigment. Like, that's where it's kind of like, you don't want to go, you want to obviously like market appropriately, but you don't want to market to the point where you're just like selling a dream at the same time.
Right.
And sometimes it's like uncomfortable conversations, but
Cause like I'm a guy and I don't like use makeup, but like makeup isn't just about like making yourself look better. It's like, it's also in some ways like kind of like aspirational too. Like, I can imagine being like somebody who's like might be a little more insecure, like wanting to like, I don't know, like wanting to experience like light skinnedness. I don't know how to phrase that.
Yeah, no, I think I know what you mean. Because I feel like when you come from the US, it's like you have a Maybelline that's a little bit cheaper that you can find at Walgreens, Walmart. Then you have like more, a little bit pricier prestige brands that you find at like a Sephora. And it's kind of like you can afford, depending on what you can afford, you can find something.
Yeah.
And then in the other markets, it's like, oh, you want to kind of aspire to buy like the prestige, more like bougier brands. And then it's like, you don't even, sometimes they don't even have your shade, but then you want to even go lighter than they offer.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not like the goal of what most of these companies are trying to do. Like, I mean, I'm hoping.
Right.
Because it's like the
but point of. But at the same time, like they're companies. So it's like, if there's like enough demand, they're like turning down business, which I, for US based companies, like if they are like seen as doing this, then like they might be canceled or whatever. There might be backlash.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more people afraid with how society is kind of like adjusting to that. And I'm like excited about that because it's kind of pushing these brands to like offer more inclusive like shade ranges, offer something from like a marketing perspective and like an asset perspective of what you, the consumer sees, like, oh, that actually looks like me and their face and neck is matching or like seriously, it's like you don't even think about it, but it's like it would be really freaking great to see someone who like in a photo shoot their face isn't just like bright as hell and then like their neck is like a totally different color because they didn't like think to color correct or something.
So that's refreshing. Some of the BIPOC women in ads have been like super whitewashed and it looks really uncomfortable.
I feel like they've gotten a lot better, and I think I can't remember if it's like CVS or Walgreens or someone that's like they don't even do editing anymore where they like blur out imperfections, quote unquote imperfections. I guess we'll see if that actually like
if that continues and
and if it's what like as consumers realistically what we want to. Because, like, that shift only happens with, like, us pushing companies to do it.
Right.
Like, let's not try to pretend as if, like, oh, they're the ones feeding into us. Like, no, they bought into it.
They want these young women to be healthier and, like, love themselves more, so.
Like, we also bought into it. I know I used to buy into it, so it's, like, important that, like, we get to a state where like, we're not doing that anymore. Yeah. But as a community, we're, like, all changing that, like, together.
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to ask you, like, Korea K-pop and like K like boy band groups have gotten more popular, and like makeup within Korean society is like a lot more, like with men is a lot more commonly used than with like American men. Mm-hmm. Like, have you like seen that in your any positions that you've had where they've?
No, Korea is actually a region I've never worked on before. Really? Both at my last company and this company too.
Hmm. Are there any like areas that like you market towards men?
Well, North America, it's just kind of like normalized, which I love. I think in the last couple of years, where it's like we use makeup like models within like our makeup campaigns. We use models within like how we show makeup applications on like the social handles. We show models on like the gondolas or like the fixtures that you see in store.
Wait, those are called gondolas?
Yeah, I guess like the fixtures. Yeah.
That's cute.
So the merchandising units, those ones, like that, it's just normalized here in America to kind of have men on it. And I think I think it's like I've seen where it's like it's definitely been more normalized to have like men utilizing makeup, but I think if I'm understanding you correctly, it sounds like these are like heterosexual men still using makeup in the regions. I don't think that's what's been normalized here. It's been like gay, like bisexual men, not heterosexual, like straight men here.
Okay.
At least that's what I've been seeing, is like they don't show them as just like heterosexual men using it. Yeah. They show it as if it's like that community. We accept that community using it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like so, a little, there's like a,
it's kind of like you assume like, yeah, we're totally fine with like men wearing makeup because it's gay men.
Yeah. It's like a wink and a nudge. Like, it's like this kind
exactly.
of.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Cause that's cool. I didn't realize. Like, I mean, I 100% assume like people on news anchors, I would assume like models obviously. And then I would assume like actors having that and like touch-ups, because that's been normalized, but it's been normalized because of like TV,
right?
To be on TV because of the cameras, blah blah,
right?
Not normal life, like the way like it's been normalized that me myself, like I as a woman, like I can just put it on and it's fine,
right?
So that's like also another thing too.
Yeah.
So like, do you know if they like wear it in like normal everyday life?
I think Korean men do wear that.
Okay.
Like wear makeup in everyday life, and I'm just like, I don't know. Like I don't. I think some Chinese men do too now. But like, I just like don't know enough about what that looks like, and like how widespread is it? Like, it's like, hey, like there are definitely like, you know, Korean men or Chinese men doing this, but it's not maybe like not widespread.
Yeah.
And like how it shows up on like how companies plan for this or like maybe market towards it or steer towards it, you know?
Yeah. I think for sure, just based on like what I've seen with North America numbers, women are the ones shopping in larger numbers for makeup for sure. But it's not to say that like that chunk won't be like decreasing.
Right.
I don't think it'll be decreasing significantly, but I do think it will decrease in a like double digits number where people will be like, okay,
right,
let's like make this, let's shift our idea of what this looks like.
Yeah.
Cause
yeah.
I've definitely seen a lot more heterosexual men wearing nail polish now.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's been kind of cool because like I used to legit beg my exes to go to the nail salon. Cause I'm like, your toes are crusty. Like, let's go to like the nail salon. Let's go like get our pedicure. And like, I'd be like, just do it like a clear polish. You don't need to do a nail polish, but like still like,
yeah,
look, come on. Like present yourself as cute as I present myself. Like, come on.
Some men's toes are like horrifying.
I'm like, what do you guys go through?
It's like ashy. Like the toenails are like long and like chipped. And it's like, bro.
I support pedicures and manicures for all.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I get maybe guys just need like more masculine looking salons or something. But I'm like, just get your toes like clipped, bruh. Like,
not you cutting through my socks. Do it yourself. Like,
seriously. Oh my God. I can't even say it on here, but it's the ghetto. It's the ghetto.
I mean, just like, just putting lotion on your feet.
That's what kills me. Like, do you stop at the ankle? Is that like a guy thing? Why do you stop at the ankle?
Confession, I used to stop at the
ankle. Why? Who taught you this? I'm like, parents literally lotion you all up. So why did you think when it's time for you to put on your own lotion to stop at the fucking ankle? Like, I don't get it.
I don't know how it happened. It just like, I don't know. I guess I just didn't feel like, I just didn't notice how dry my feet were. And then like one Minnesota winter, I was like, I don't remember. It was like the day after a shower or something. And I was like, oh, my feet like feel crusty.
Oh my God.
And I put lotion on and I was like, oh, like this is a luxurious experience.
I have to get you like foot masks now. Like feet
masks. Wait, foot mask exists?
Yes. Yes.
What is
like,
it?
Like I literally put, you have like, you know how you have like a face mask?
Yeah.
It's like a sock foot mask. And you can have one that's like for like peeling, like the back, like the callus, if you have calluses. And like you'll put the one on and then you'll put a sock over it. You'll go to bed. You have some overnight ones. You have some like. Yes. Oh my God. I can't wait to introduce you to this, this world. Yes.
This is
foot masks are a thing.
What? Never.
Okay. I'm surprised that during COVID you didn't think, like, I was giving myself pedicures at home during COVID, like scraping my callus, massaging, like I learned every single step. And like, men, you can at least like put on a foot mask twice a week. Damn. Oh my God.
I think part of it for me is like having an office job and not being that hard on my feet insulates like a little bit. But you're right, point taken, that men in general, including myself, can and should take care of our feet better.
Yeah, no, foot mask is where it's at, and lotion your entire body, including your feet. That's all I ask for any male listener today is like, lotion your feet, please.
It does feel really good to lotion your feet.
Yes, it probably sucks it all that moisture because it hasn't gotten any.
That is a possible thing. You might have to do two rounds of moisturizing because... just sipping the tea and shaking her head.
I'm so disappointed that I didn't introduce you to this lifestyle. I'm like, of all my friends, how did I not introduce you to like foot mask? I would have expected you to honestly know what a foot mask is.
No.
How much I mask.
This is entirely foreign.
Like, usually my friends know like all the masks because I'm always talking about masking and what type of mask I'm doing and whatever. But now I gotta start sending you more pictures and like recos of everything that I'm doing.
Send me feet.
Literally, like, look at my feet today. I even did a blog post on it.
Some men pay top dollar for feet pics.
Yo, and my feet look cute. I'm not kidding. My feet look cute. I honestly would consider that type of lifestyle. Make some extra change on the side.
Mm.
You're like, yes. Foot picks.
Oh my god. Something else I wanted to talk to you about, and I like roasted the shit out of you on a conversation. What? African time.
Oh yeah. I have a PhD in that. Thank you very much. Very, very proud.
Tell me about African time.
I don't know. I 100% feel like it is in my blood. Like, it is in the streams of my veins. It, like, soars, like, moves throughout my body. I just
What, cannot, like, away from what you were going supposed to do?
I cannot be on time to things. I actually...
You've gotten much better.
Yes. I was going to say, I do have to... People have to acknowledge I've known
you,
better.
I've known you for, like, almost, what, like, 8 years at this point mm-hmm. now? Like, you, the last...
10! You've known me since freshman year, since 2012 summer. Yeah, oh I guess God. That is 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, the last, like, 5 years or so, you've gotten, like, much better.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? So much better. I think work has, like, instilled that in me, because I can't be out here
living in the capitalist. Literally.
I can't be 2 hours late to a meeting. What?
Mr. CEO, let me explain. So, there's there's white people time, and then there's African time.
So, if you want
and,
me like, to African time is a little,
African time's a little unpredictable.
Literally, I'm
not trying to take it to a racial place, but I'm just saying. I'm just being honest here.
I'm just saying.
I'm asking you to be culturally sensitive.
I don't know about your weddings and your culture, but our, like, Somali weddings, we say, like, 8 o'clock, 7, 8 o'clock start. Mofos don't come in until 10, 11. And then you see, like, the Caucasian people, they're at, like, 7, 8, and you're like, oh, sweetheart, how did your friend not tell you? You did not need to be here right now. The venue opened at that time. Like, that invite was not the truth. That is not the truth. It's like, we do it for weddings, we do it for parties, we do it for, like, dinners. Like, it's so normalized with us.
Like, what's the math look like? Like, what is the thought process?
So, it depends on the event. I feel like for weddings, as horrible as it sounds, it is, like... You say 7, 8, I do not even start getting ready until the time that the wedding is supposed to start. Like, getting ready at my house.
Okay.
So I'll probably be there, like, 2 hours later.
Okay.
And that's just the norm. Like, we all expect it. The bride doesn't even come in. They're like, bride comes in at 9, doesn't come in until midnight. And you're like, how did we do, like, how are we functioning as a people? Like, I don't get it. When we go to, like, dinners with friends. It's kind
of beautiful, though, to be like...
Right?
To absolutely reject these capitalist ideas of timeliness.
Yeah.
And be like,
fuck that.
The times were like, not even like real suggestion. They were just like, here's like, I'm just giving you some information. You plan it as you would.
Yeah. I feel like dinner with friends, like right now, there's a group chat talking about like, let's do dinner at 6:30. I probably will leave at 6:30 and head there at 6:30. They should not expect anything less than that. But now I actually am like, okay, let me get there around like 6:45. Okay. Usually it would have been like, I'll get there at like 8 o'clock. Like, we're good on time.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
Circling back to our friendship origin story. There were times before I was like accustomed to African time where I was like, well, I was ready and waiting for you for like 2 hours. Because I think when we first met, I don't remember if I had access to a car consistently. So I think sometimes, like, you were picking me up.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, waiting for, like, 2 hours for you.
I'm on my way, still at work. And it's like, as a community, we've all accepted it.
Yeah.
And, like, we just know. Like, and depending on your friends, like, you just know.
Yeah.
And, like, Aaron, you, even when we were talking about meeting up today, you were like, 1 o'clock, but for you, 12. Like, you know? And I was like, thank you. I appreciate that. Because I get it.
Yeah.
I 100% get it. I get it.
And you've, like, influenced me, too, to, like, have this relationship with time where I'm, like, now consistently, like, 10 to 15 minutes late to things.
Mm-hmm. Like, why be early? Ew. Yeah.
So, really? Within, like, the Asian communities, like, I feel like Chinese folks are, like, pretty punctual. Especially, like, the older folks, I think they're pretty punctual.
Mm.
Like, my parents try very hard to be punctual. Within, like, people more my age, I don't know what it's like in China, but, like, people my age in the West are a little more, like, depending on how whitewashed they are, I guess,
mm-hmm.
they're a little more, like, willing to, like, be late for things. And this is specifically Chinese folks with... Filipino folks, they're like African time. They're like party starts at 7. I'm not gonna show up until like 10.
Yep.
Yeah, and like if you show up at 10, like no, there's no food out. Yeah. There's nothing set up. Yeah.
They get it.
Yeah, like Filipinos are on that like African time. Indians also very much on Indian or African time.
Mm-hmm.
Like those like weddings. Mm-mm. Don't show up on time.
What do they call it? Like CP, color people time. CPT. CPT. I was like, what was it again? For a second? I had to spell that out for a second.
Yeah. But with my BIPOC friends, like, being late is like, not quite 2 hours.
But we're pretty commonly late. I'm like 30 now. I'm 30 minutes.
You've gotten much, much better.
I'm like a 15, 30 minute criminal. I'm not like a 2 hour anymore.
No.
It's been a while. Because I also don't do, like, late night stuff or, like, I don't have, like, that free time anymore, too.
Oh, that sounded like a lot more painful than it really was.
Yeah. You don't have that free time to, like...
That statement hit both of us, I feel.
Yeah. Makes me sad.
Yeah.
But it's, like, also part of adulting, I guess. But, yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, so something else I wanted to talk about was, like, mental health, and in some ways that is very much adulting, taking care of your mental health, and for us, like, we both come from communities where mental health is, like, pretty stigmatized, sometimes very stigmatized, and, yeah, I wanted to talk about, like, what that looked like in your experience with, like, your own community, and...
Yeah.
Yeah, let's start with that.
Yeah, I would say, like, growing up versus now, it's adjusted only because of now growing up, it's, like, my age, like, people that are the similar age to myself, like, we've kind of adjusted, like, the way we think about mental health. I'd say growing up, though, it was, like, you would see people, go, like, struggling and, like, going through things and, like, episodes, and it was kind of like, oh, they need to, like, read the Quran or, like, go back to, like, God, but, like, talk to Allah, he will fix all. And I'm like, I think a concept of that, and I have a hard time with that, is that, like, yes, I 100% believe in Allah, and I believe in prayer as, like, an aspect of it, and going to the Quran, and, like, taking a moment, and, like, reflecting.
Yeah.
But I also believe that Allah created beings called therapists for a reason. Like, he created mental facilities, and, like, all these, like, resources for a purpose.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to have you get burnt and then not create, like, an ointment or a doctor to go see. So then, like, what do? Not go see a doctor if you, like, burn yourself because, like, Allah's going to fix it. Allah has brought, like, if he's, like, allowed you to, like, survive you through that burn, there's a doctor there to, like, help heal you the rest of the way.
Right.
So, and that's kind of the way I visualize, like, mental health and, like, mental health needs and resources is, like, growing up, it was just always, like, religion will fix it. They need to pray more or they need this. And I'm like... Now looking at it as an adult, I'm like, holy shit, like, we could have all done so much better if we got, like, the mental health, like, resources that every single one of us needed.
Yeah.
And I think my generation has 100%, like, normalized it, and I'm thankful for that, because I think we're in this state where we're still talking about it as, like, oh, our parents, our grandparents, XYZ, where, like, my children will never feel that. Like, I am confident in saying that because they can maybe say their grandparents or great-grandparents. They will never say my parents didn't support this.
Yeah.
Or my parents never, like, introduced me to, like, if I was having a tantrum, like, sit me down and be like, let's talk about it. Or if they'll never say, like, my parents, like, I lost a parent and, like, I didn't get, like, services or, like, meet someone or talk to someone.
Yeah.
Like, that's not going to be the type of parent that I am. And I'm, like, hopeful that my generation of peers also doesn't face that, because I feel like that's one thing that all my girlfriends and I have been talking about, like, Somali, Kenyan, Arab, whatever, like, within that same cultural background, is, like, holy shit, like, what would we have, how would this situation have been different if, like, our parents had taken us to therapy?
Yeah.
You know, or, like, not,
like, kind so of, like... so much grief and, like, suffering that, like...
So unnecessary.
Yeah, exactly. It's, like, so when you cross that threshold, you're, like, that... Now that I've received the help and know how to get help, like, the suffering I had previously before I asked for this, it, like, that was pointless.
Yep.
I did not become stronger. I did not become a better person for that suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it makes it awkward, too, because it's, like... I'm kind of like that person that's kind of normalizing different things within just like the way I'm being.
Yeah.
One obviously is like moving away from home, etc., like pre-marriage. And then I think going to your question about mental health is like, I just throw in like, oh yeah, I'll have to bring that up to my therapist.
Yeah.
And like at first I used to like joke around about it to kind of like just joke like, ha 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 ha, yeah, hee hee. But then it's like, oh no, like I'm going to like, I would not laugh about it. I'd like look at someone in the eye and be like, oh yeah, like I'll have to bring it up to my therapist actually, because I don't know why I haven't dealt with that.
Yeah.
And then my mom or like someone will be like, wait, what? You're seeing a therapist? Like, yeah. They're like, what's wrong? And sometimes I'm like, well, nothing is wrong, but I'd like to see a therapist and talk through something, or like my feelings, or just talk, yeah, through like why I reacted a certain way about something. Versus I used to kind of like, not, I don't want to say I hid it, but I think that I would just like, because I would tell them, you know? But I think I did it in a way where it was like, oh, like, it's not serious. Like, it's just therapy, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
Where now it's like, okay, well, I'm going to talk about to my therapist about that. Or I'm working through this with my therapist.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you should, like, think about it as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so for, like, for me in the Asian community, yeah, mental health was stigmatized. It was, like, this perception of, like, oh, like, you must be crazy. Like, mm-hmm, exactly what you were saying. Like, you, there must be something serious going, mm-hmm, on. Like, something's wrong, like, with you. Or so there's some... something like shameful is going on in your life that you need to like address and fix. And it was definitely like something that you like hid and like, mm-hmm, didn't talk about. For Chinese folks, I didn't, it was just like not a super religious bunch. So we didn't like shove people towards like reading, yeah, the Bible or something. I guess some people who are, some groups who are more like into like the Chinese herbal medicines might try to find somebody to, mm-hmm, to provide that, but it was a lot of like shame and like hiding and, mm-hmm, like I feel like that's a very like default Chinese response to like you know, bury it up, cover it up, mm-hmm, not talk about it to other people,
like don't embarrass like the family,
don't embarrass the family, you're not, mm-hmm, embarrassing yourself, you're embarrassing the whole family,
mm-hmm.
So like there was this like really unfair like way that it would reflect on the family, so you felt that even though you weren't the person going through the mental thing,
yeah,
but if you were the person who was going through the mental thing, there was like so much more shame than like, mm-hmm, just like dealing with the thing. You had to deal with the shame around the thing,
mm-hmm,
and just so much harder to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
Like even now within the like Hmong community, they're like much more relatively like recent like immigrants to America, so like the idea of mental health is like it hasn't had time to have like generation that's grown up with it,
yeah,
so it's like really stigmatized. They like want to hide it from, you, yeah, know, whoever is, you know, if it's a child, they want to hide it from, you know, their parents,
the family, yeah,
yeah, which is really fucking hard to do if you're a child hiding literally mental health from your parents, because like the first thing your therapist is going to do is like, oh, let's bring your parents in, which is exactly what you don't want to hear if, yeah, you're a child in this like in a household that stigmatizes mental health.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I guess like that's the hard thing that I kind of like, it's not that I accept, I'm just kind of like, yeah, I'm over it. Like, it is what it is. I'm done trying to, like, change the minds of, like,
yeah,
my ancestors and, like, the generation before, because I just think it's literally makes no sense to me why if my child is having an episode and, like, my child needs help, why, yeah, am I feeling embarrassed for my family?
Yeah.
Like, why would that be the first thought coming to my head versus, like, holy shit, I need to get help for them?
Yeah.
Like, it's, that should be your first thing.
It's such a weird, like... mindset, because,
mm-hmm,
it's recognizing that there is something going on,
mm-hmm,
but thinking that it's far better to not do anything and cover it up,
mm-hmm,
and like maybe even make it worse intentionally or unintentionally,
yeah,
than it is to like try to get help,
yeah,
and like give yourself or the person a shot about like getting out of it.
Yeah.
And I think in today's age, it's also a lot more commonly understood that like you don't need to have a massive, huge problem, like a huge debilitating problem to go out and seek mental health.
Yeah.
Like you don't need to get to the point where you're like having a nervous breakdown and like you cannot function, you cannot care for yourself, you can't hold down a job, you can't, yeah, go to school. And then like, oh, like it's bad enough that I can go get mental health.
Exactly. I'm hoping it becomes normal as if, like, it becomes normalized as if, like, you're just going to your, like, dental checkup or, like, you're just going to your primary care physician.
Right.
It's
right.
kind of like, let's, I use my, like, my therapist as like a check-in.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, don't get me wrong, when I first start, when I restarted it last year, it was like, I'm going through something and I need to learn, like, this concept of, like, boundaries. And, like,
yeah.
I had a purpose for it. And then after we kind of walk through some of these things and, like, learnings and practicing what I, like, have been learning, it was like, okay, like, what's the next, like, what's, what else would I want to talk about?
Yeah.
What are, like, my, what are things from my background that, like, I'm not realizing that are actually being, like, brought to life now in the way that I act, the way I interact with people, my, the ways that, like, just little things that I just didn't think about, like, oh, shit, like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I, something I didn't, now that I'm, like, an adult and have been to therapy a couple of of times, like, something I wish I could have given myself, my childhood self, like, more, like, compassion was mm-hmm. that, like, yeah, doing new things is really, really hard.
Yeah.
It is really, really scary sometimes, especially if, like, you've tried, like, when you were younger and tried the thing and it, like, blew up in your face, whatever that looked like,
mm-hmm.
and now you're trying it again, like, you learned the first couple of times you tried it that, like, it didn't go well,
yeah.
and, like, trying it another time is, like, a very brave thing to do, and it's very commendable.
Yeah.
And that, like, processing these emotions, or even, like, talking through, like, hey, like, I kind of want to try approaching this problem in this way, like, what do you think about it, is, like, incredibly helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wish I would, like, childhood self received a little more compassion from, like, that internal monologue of, yeah, doing new things is hard and can be scary, and
mm-hmm.
And you should, like, try to keep, you know, nudging yourself forward. You don't have to, like, dive into it.
Yeah.
You can just, like, take steps towards it, and that is a meaningful progress.
Can you remind me, were your parents immigrants to the U.S.?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're first generation.
Yeah, like it's depending on how you count. Some people count,
like, from that the first.
Yeah, one. Yeah. Okay. But I usually see it as, like, the first generation is refers to the generation that was born in America.
That born, right? Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm, like, in Asian American communities, I'd be an ABC, American born Chinese.
ABC? What yeah. does that mean?
American born Chinese. Oh, I just told you.
Oh, you were saying it so fast that I was like, is this an acronym that I should know? Like, what? Okay, you were literally saying the acronym.
Yeah.
Okay, because I feel really strongly, and I've Googled this a couple of times, but I'm like, I feel really strongly that any immigrant, like, parent, maybe single people fine, but that's not my focus right now, but, like, when it comes to immigrant families and parents, need to go under therapy here. Because oh, I'm yeah. like, that is a huge adjustment yeah. for you to be bringing your children to an entirely different country,
yeah.
Entirely different customs.
Yeah.
You most likely, if, like, for most immigrants, like, that were coming here, like, in the 90s, pre-90s, you were told, like, your education was trash, even though it wasn't, and that you had to redo school.
Oh, like, 90s so that, racism was, like, intense.
It's like, my parents had to redo college. Like, it's just, it's wild. Like, whatever accreditations you got were nothing.
Yeah, like, you could discriminate, like, pretty openly
yeah.
in private, if that makes sense.
No, exactly. And yeah. I'm like, I'm just thinking, like, that could have made such a big difference. And I'm not trying to say, like, they needed to be assimilated more.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that, like, you literally were going under such a huge transition
yeah.
that it would have benefited you and your family members to be in this position of, like, okay,
yeah.
let's just check in.
Were your parents, like, refugees?
That's a good question. Technically, I think we were, because my stepfather or my dad and his brother, I think, came out to college out here, and then they went back and they were in Somalia, and then the war started. So we got, like, I don't think it was asylum, but I think we came here as refugees because okay. it was through my dad in Somalia.
Okay.
Because we were, like, he was displaced from that, like, okay. my family was.
Yeah, because my parents weren't refugees, but, like, my parents grew up, like, lived through the Cultural Revolution, so a time of, like, tremendous political upheaval
mm-hmm.
and, like, immense, like, poverty. Like, the wealthy China of today, even with its, like, wealth inequality, like, seemed completely unfathomable at the time.
Yeah.
China was super poor at the time. Yeah, so my parents coming here, they had my uncle, like, sponsored my family. And I think, I can't remember who I was talking with this about, but, like, my parents had some, like, lived through some shit.
Mm-hmm.
And they, they did not have a chance to like resolve that like trauma, mm-hmm. both like from when they were living in China and like the daily like racial things that,
yeah.
like as a child, I probably didn't fully understand. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm thinking about it, like seeing those things, even though I didn't understand them, probably contributed a lot to my like childhood anxiety.
Yeah.
And I am lucky that I have time to like the time and the resources.
Yeah.
And like the words, mm-hmm. and the vocabulary to turn these that things. Part. Yeah. To yeah. turn these things from like traumatic experiences into mm-hmm. like wisdom and knowledge.
Yeah.
Whereas my parents, they have like more years of life experience, but it's a lot of times I question like are you handing out wisdom to me?
Yeah.
Right? Or are you handing down your response to a trauma that you experienced?
Yes.
Which is like painful in so many ways, because it's like, mm-hmm. like I want to be like a good son, I want to like listen to my parents, and I want to like treat my ancestors with respect, mm-hmm. but also like I don't know if I want to continue like trauma responses,
mm-hmm. or neglecting your well-being, right. by just like pushing everything down of like what you've been through to be like, all right, I just sort of pushed through for my family.
Right.
That concept to me is like, that dies with me. Like, yeah. it is not being passed down. I refuse. Yeah.
And it's like so painful to see my parents, like when they have these like negative responses, where mm-hmm. it's like, oh, like you guys, like maybe you're not living through it right now, but there was a time where that was, you did live through that. And like, yeah, just painful that they had to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm very thankful that, again, I don't have kids now, but, like, I refuse for my children to, like...
Yeah.
And it's not to say that I had a bad childhood. Like, I don't think I had a bad childhood, especially if I'm, like, looking at it through, like, a comparison lens. I don't think I had, a horrible childhood. I just think that there are certain things that I just don't think needed to be a struggle that we lived through.
Yeah. I don't know how to call this out, but, like... like not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to phrase it, but I want to draw attention to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I've heard people say, like, I've seen people feel guilty about thinking they might have PTSD because they're like, oh, but like I didn't go to war. I didn't like experience something.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, like nobody says that. Like, there's no, in the DSM manual, there's no like,
yeah.
went to war and was fucked up by it.
Yeah.
That's not a criteria of it. And I think for you and I, like, where we don't have those, like, you know, and then my parent beat the fuck out of me mm-hmm. moments, or like, and then to punish me for not getting a good grade, I was like, they didn't feed me dinner for a month. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like we have those moments.
No, yeah.
But also, like, there are some moments where they're, like, looking back, we'd be like, I would never, ever, ever do this to my child.
Literally, yeah. Yeah. It's like, I'm glad I wasn't in those situations, but also, right. like, not reliving, like, certain right. ones that I still talk about now in, like, almost, like, my late 20s, early 30s. And yeah. I'm like, oh, God. Yeah. Clearly, I'm not going to let this go, so I don't want to, like, put my kid through the same crap.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, yeah, it's, I don't know, sometimes, I lived through some abusive, like, practices. I don't think my parents fully understood how abusive they were.
Yeah.
And I still grapple with how abusive it was, even, like, as an adult. Mm-hmm. I've also, like, returned to therapy, and one of the things I feel like I need to spend more time thinking about is like, yeah, I didn't have like the hallmarks of like clearly an abusive situation, but there were lots of things that were in fact abusive, and like,
yeah,
things that I had to like quite literally go to therapy to like overcome some of those things.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is like, I think you should also allow yourself to think that it was some of the things were abusive and like traumatic for your child version, for mm-hmm. your childhood version to experience.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like I definitely haven't touched upon too much of that within, like, my discussions with my therapist. And I'm also currently right now in the
middle of... I hate having to bring that up with my therapist. It sucks.
Right?
It's awful.
So last question. So I'm like, anyways, like I was talking about the weather. We're going to go back to the weather. Like, you just, like, are quick to change subjects.
Oh, God. And they know. They know.
Yeah, they're so nosy. I'm like, shut up. I'm like, can you not? Like, you're being so annoying. I came here to talk about a bad weather. Why are you talking about life right now with me?
You come in for, like, you come in for an immediate problem, and then, like, three questions later, you're like, no, I don't want to talk to my parents.
Literally.
I was so mad at my therapist when she pulled that on me.
Oh.
Yeah. And leave her a bad Yelp review.
Don't go to her. We'll get you through shit.
She'll make you talk about
in
your parents.
In a meaningful way. Damn it.
Oh, I'm kidding. I love my therapist. She's great. He's great, and it's been a lot of fun working with her.
Yeah.
That's the other thing I, like 20-year-old version of Kai versus, like, 30-year-old version of Kai knows how to approach therapy in, like a playful, curious, productive manner. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is, like, I'm, like, doing really hard work. Also, like, I can, like, laugh about it. I can, like, poke fun at it.
Yeah.
I can sit with that discomfort a little longer, and I have like a better sense of, like, I'm growing positively and growing versus growing negatively.
That's good. I'm definitely not there yet. but I'm also not where I used to be, which was my first time ever in therapy. I think it was like fall, winter of 2014, after I had a really, like, my first bad breakup.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, my first session going in to a counselor, and I was just like, so I'm having a really hard time getting over this breakup. Like, I'm here for therapy so that we can quickly get over it. So, like, let's do this. And he was like, I don't know what you learned about therapy, but
he's like, this girl's gonna fire me in two sessions. She's gonna get a different therapist.
Like, crying laughing that, like, I really thought, like, I walked into this man's office and was like, anyways, what do we do here? Yeah. What do we do to get this, like, get over this? Because I'm over it, so I need to be over it and not cry about this anymore. So I'm not that bad anymore about, like, understanding what the hell therapy is about, but I'm definitely not in this spot where it's like, because now I've gone through, I want to say, three therapists, and, like, unfortunately, because I moved states, I had to switch therapists, and they didn't practice in Chicago.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, damn, I should have never even told his ass that I was moving. Because, like, the moment I told him, it was like, because he didn't know, like, we were hella, like, doing it online. But yeah, I mean, I changed jobs, so, like, I had to, like, leave the state, so he wasn't licensed in the state I was going to, and I had to go through two different therapists, and I didn't like both of them, which I'm finally learning that, like, it is kind of like a relationship where it's like, do you guys vibe, do you not vibe, like, you don't have to, for a while, excuse me, I was telling friends, like, I just not feeling this therapist, and I can't figure out what it is. So I'm, like, in a weird state now of also, like, finding a therapist, but
yeah.
I think I'm also more comfortable now of, like, if the vibes aren't there, like, okay, like, this isn't going to be a productive session for neither you or I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Finding a therapist that you feel comfortable with. I feel like, especially when if it's like your first experience, it just, like, felt very vulnerable the first couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And being with somebody that you feel comfortable with, that you felt understood you, was, like, super meaningful and, like, made you feel more comfortable opening up.
Yeah.
I feel like I've gotten to the point where, I can, like, I feel like I can advocate for myself a little bit better.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is hard finding a good therapist, like, the first that you feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
And also, like, your therapist isn't always going to be right 100% of the time. So your therapist shouldn't be, like, telling you what to do step by step. Like, they're not a life coach.
Mm-hmm.
So going to your therapist and, like, seeking that, like, give me magic words to help me feel better is, like, not setting yourself up or the therapist for success. Yeah. They'll ask you questions to, like, explore what you're feeling and talk through that. Sometimes the most definite thing they'll do is, like, they'll propose, like, hey, like, what would it feel like if you thought about it like this? Mm-hmm. And then there's a really good chance you'll be like, wow, that's fucking genius. I never thought about that before. Yeah. And you're going to be like, wow, that was really obvious. Like, I don't know why. I really don't know why I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you might be like, that's really not sitting well with me. And you can say that to your therapist. Like, yeah. There is, like, I understand that there's, like, a power dynamic because they're, like, quote unquote, a figure of authority.
The expert in, yeah, like, the field.
But also, like, you're the one who's living your life. You're the, yeah, you're the person driving the seat of your own life, and you can push back and say, you know, I'm not comfortable with that, or I don't think that's going to work because of X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And you can have a discussion, like a fruitful and productive discussion, and maybe you were wrong about your initial assumptions. Like, maybe you can try that thing that you thought was a terrible fucking idea.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you're like, you're healing and you're growing.
Yeah.
And it is, like, a refreshing process to maybe shed some things that are holding you down and keeping you from growing further and getting to a point where you can try new things and, like, find new ways of doing things is, like, mm-hmm, really exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've gotten through all the topics that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Sabrina, do you have any social media that you want people to follow you on?
I just thought of that TikTok that I showed you. Nazi.
No, did you make that? Where should people follow you, though?
You guys can follow me at sabriri.com or sabriri, not.com. Wait, you have to delete all of these. Let's do that last part again. Where can people follow you? Well, Kai, where can follow me is at SABBRIRI, Sabriri, on Instagram.
That's it?
That's it. I have a blog, but I shut it down to redo it. So you'll catch me in my new blog at sabriri.com January 1st, 2022.
Oh, you've got a
launch date. I launched it in 2020, right before the pandemic. And then it was like, oh my God, what's happening now? And then I was like, I'm going to put a pause on this. And then I just never went back to it. And then I was like, wait, it's been like almost like, yeah, it's been a year now since I paused it. So
yeah.
I just was like, let me get back to this. Because the whole goal was just to be like, it's like my diary of like a corporate millennial girl in New York City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not in New York City
anymore. I'm not in New York City. I'm pretty sure I'm like older millennial now, so I'm just kind of like, all right, I don't know what's happening anymore. I want to cry.
All right. So follow Sabrina on her IG there and her blog. Thank you for being a guest. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That was so much
fun. Thanks for listening to Enter the Jasmine Dragon. You can also follow Sabrina on TikTok at Sabribri. So that's SABBRIBRI. Follow this podcast wherever you get your podcast. I'm on Facebook at Enter the Jasmine Dragon Podcast and TikTok at Enter the Jasmine Dragon.